We're a little extra fired up today. We're back for episode 21 of the Chat New England podcast. This is the Super Bowl 46 part one edition. We're going to be here talking about the game today, previewing the game next week, and recapping the game the week after. I am Nick LaRocque, and I'm joined, as always, by Ben Babcock of Chat.
Get it right, man. Come on.
Sorry,
man. That long.
I'm sorry, man. I'm fired up. But before you say anything, I think you and I agreed earlier that we want to dedicate this episode of the podcast to Mr. Rex Ryan.
Yeah, here. I think the anti-Rex Ryan Bowl, as this game will be called. I mean, I don't know if we're even supposed to use the term Super Bowl because you can't really say it in advertisements or anything. So let's just call this the game that will make Rex Ryan very unhappy because it's like a perfect storm of his worst-case scenarios. He's got the crosstown team he shares the stadium with representing the NFC and his bitter rivals, the hated Patriots, representing the AFC. So wherever he is right now, smelling feet, doing his thing, you know,
eating a goddamn snack.
Eating a goddamn snack and sniffing some toes. I mean, hey, Rex, what's up, man? What's up now?
I love it. I love the fact that there is a book out there that was just published last year saying where he's just basically saying we're a better football team than the Giants. We're a better organization than the Giants. We're not going to be their little brother anymore. Like, everybody's going to see that we're a better football team. And then, you know, he was so boisterous the week leading up to the game. He did all of these classless things covering the Giants Super Bowl murals before the game. And, you know, the Giants were in a tough way going into that game. And it says it all around the media. Even the players are admitting something about that really fired them up. And ever since Victor Cruz caught that 99-yarder in the first half, God, they've just looked like a whole different team.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear to me that there's only room for one little brother in New York, and that's Eli Manning.
Oh, God, man. You know I love Eli anyways, but I'm so high on Eli right now, I can't even.
I'm getting secondhand high on Eli. I'm like that Canadian snowboarder. Like, I might test positive for your highness in regards to Eli Manning's quarterback play.
Oh my God.
And maybe that's a good place to start. I mean, let's jump into this NFC championship game, a game that you were in attendance, man. You were in the crowd. I mean, you got to take us through the atmosphere, your day. Just walk us through the whole experience.
Yeah, dude, it was a great day. There's a few things. I mean, one, you know, Candlestick Park is, you know, I'm sure most of the listeners know, is on the way out. It's might be the oldest park left in the NFL. I'm not sure, but certainly one of the oldest. And the Niners have plans in place to build a new stadium in Santa Clara. But, you know, for the purposes of this game, the atmosphere was really great because, you know, these are two teams. No two teams have met more times in the playoffs than the Niners and the Giants. You know, this is a real old-time rivalry. And when you're in Candlestick Park, you really feel like you're in the 1970s. I mean, as soon as you get there, I mean, there's the whole feel of it. If you look at it, it's a strangely shaped stadium. It's funny to think that at the time it was built, it was, you know, on the cutting edge of architecture. You know,
whatever that means.
There's like four tunnels that can get you into the stadium. So when you're going in or out, it takes forever, and you're just with this huge, huge mass of people. But it was great. And, you know, I did end up wearing some Giants gear. You know, the big storyline leading into the game was that there were going to be hundreds of undercover San Francisco police officers in Giants gear because, obviously, two people were shot earlier this year at that stadium. And the week of the Saints game, there were lots of Saints fans who were harassed, including children. And so I did wear some gear, but I had it set so that I could zip my coat up. I have a lucky Giants headband, which I was able to remove at the end of the game. And I was able to exit feigning some disappointment, making it seem to the casual observer like maybe I was a disappointed Niners fan. you know, at the very least, they wouldn't be able to tell which team I had been supporting until I got to my car.
That's a pretty veteran move there on your part.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well played.
Thank you. But, you know, I got to tell you one thing that I was a little disappointed in. Nothing about the game. I mean, the game was phenomenal, and you could not ask for a better atmosphere. And I feel like I have a whole new respect for what it takes to win a road playoff game now. Because I saw these two teams play in the same stadium in the regular season, and then I was at this game. And it didn't even feel like we were in the same place. I mean, it was so much louder. People were so much more intense. It was just an electric feeling. And in the week 10, it sort of felt, you know, it was a beautiful Bay Area day. It was nice and calm. People were enjoying themselves, even though it was a close game. I mean, this place was rocking. And I got to tell you, the one thing that surprised me is this. I've watched the game on recording now about four times. Since I got home, I couldn't sleep that night. I needed to watch it. I've watched.
Are you still fully erect?
Yeah.
From this game?
Yeah, and frankly, it's a little embarrassing. But so when I watch on TV, and you watch the game, I assume, right?
I did. Yes.
It really looks like it is a sunny day when you watch the first half on TV. It looks like it's sunny. It doesn't really look like it's raining. And I think that must be some type of camera technology because, we did not see – there was no sun to be seen for the entire day.
No, I mean, you could tell it was raining because, you know, when it would switch to a different camera, a lot of times you could see that the lens was wet and it had kind of this weird glow. I mean, they kept bringing it up, obviously, throughout the course of the game. And I think Candlestick's got to be, like, one of the last few stadiums in the league that still has natural turf, too. So you could see that, you know, obviously that's something that's not as common in the NFL anymore is actually have a grass field. You throw the elements in there. But I thought it was kind of the perfect setting for this game where you got like two really, you know, tough physical teams, battling it out, you know, so to me, I guess I thought the elements were playing a role, but it, in a way, because of the strengths of these two teams, I thought it almost, you know, it's not like you had like the 2001 Rams out there slogging it up. I mean, you had two very physical football teams of running games, great defensive lines, great linebacker play. So it was kind of fitting for that atmosphere. And I mean, the one thing I noticed at the game, I mean, it sounded like there was a pretty solid Giants contingent at the game. I mean, you could tell from watching the game that the place was going crazy. But, you know, it seemed like you guys were fairly well represented there.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it was just the undercover police, but.
Well, it was. The Giants fans definitely travel well. So there was we had a couple guys in front of us who had come all the way from the East Coast for the game.
Wow.
And there were a lot of people that had done so. But, you know, this is also the Bay Area. There's a lot of transplants here.
That's what I've kind of figured. San Francisco is one of those places like maybe not so much like Los Angeles when I was there. I mean, I've never met anybody from Los Angeles in Los Angeles.
Right.
It's just kind of everybody's from somewhere else. But
I will say this. It was when we went, you know, most of the time, you know, I go see Celtics Warriors and Oracle Arena is about half Celtics fans. And we went in week 10.
Yep.
When we went in week 10, I mean, I would say, I don't want to say it was half Giants fans, but it was we had an entire row in week 10 that was all Giants fans. And I would say, you know, close to half, really. But this game was not that way. Certainly they were well represented, probably a higher percentage than you would have seen had the game been taking place in Jersey. But
yeah.
For sure, this was a very intense atmosphere, and when the Giants had the ball, it was extremely loud. And, you know, the last thing before we actually get to the game, what I was saying about the TV, I mean, I guess you could see it played a role, but, I mean, when we sat down, there was so much fog at first, it was almost even hard to see the entire field when they were warming up, and it was really, really dark, and I think that would have made for bad TV. I mean, I felt like I was in like a mythical underworld or something. It was just like, it was completely dark. It was like coming down like crazy on us. You got the fog over the bay as you look outside the arena. It was really intense. And I got to say, it was, I think a lot of road teams would have found it nearly impossible to win there. I mean, I have so much more respect. I mean, the noise level when the right. when the road team has the ball in this game was off the charts. And I noticed, because obviously that wet field really hurts the pass rushers, right? Because it's hard for them to get off the ball. Yep. And the offensive line, it's a silent count. And you could finally notice in the second half that the pass rushers were sort of starting to get a read on the other team's count, sort of starting to figure out the offensive lines, because these quarterbacks were having their way back there in the pocket in the first half. And then suddenly in the second half, Alex Smith was getting flushed out of the pocket. Eli Manning was just getting crushed on every play.
He took a lot of hits in that game.
Oh, God.
He's a tough dude.
Yeah, and I gotta tell you what, man, I gotta start by just taking my hat off to the Niners, because what you hear about that defense, I mean, they are – everything that people say, and even more. I mean, that front seven is unbelievable. I mean,
that's got to be the best front seven in football, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, without question.
Would we put those two linebackers in there? I mean, I think the Giants' defensive line has got to be up there in consideration for that, with talking Pierre Paul and Canty. But I mean, Navarro and Willis. And those two, the two Smiths on the outside, I mean, that is a tough group. I mean, hats off to the Giants for handling them as well as they did. And certainly to Eli, because, I mean, I watched him take like three or four serious legit shots in that game. And he stood in there and took them all. That was an impressive display of toughness on his part.
Yeah, that's like the classic shot of what everybody sort of ridicules Eli for. The play where fourth quarter and he's got three dudes coming at him and he's backpedaling, and he hits Bradshaw for the first down, and then he just gets pummeled by three guys and he pops up to call timeout, and his like jersey is under his shoulder pads and his helmet is halfway up his face Man, it doesn't look pretty with him ever, but,
Gets it done, man.
A lot of guys would not have stood in to take that hit.
No.
But, well, so this defense, these guys fucking died on the field Sunday. I mean, that defensive front did everything that they could have. They deserve to be playing in the Super Bowl for sure. Those seven guys do. I mean, I can't remember a defensive front playing better. I mean, and you can talk about any in the league. You can talk about Baltimore. You can talk about Houston, which Houston, I think, is very underrated in all facets of the game.
Oh, yeah.
But I would take that San Francisco defense over anybody. And I think the biggest takeaway from that game is just that, unfortunately, the 49er offense is just so – I don't even know what the word is. I mean, so conservative and so vanilla and so predictable that, I really felt like if the Giants didn't get that turnover that they got in overtime, I mean, that thing could have gone 2-3 overtimes
it looked like that. I mean, it was 8 minutes in just about before the Giants got that field goal. I mean, and it wasn't looking like anybody was going to break away. You know, it really did kind of take a mistake on the Niners' part to blow it open. But, I mean... Yeah, that was – I mean, I'm surprised because of the way that San Francisco played in that New Orleans game the week before. I mean, Alex Smith looked sharp. He looked like a very dynamic quarterback, a guy who can get out of the pocket and make plays. It became obvious to me watching the Giants game that Vernon Davis is really their only receiving threat. Like, Crabtree is nowhere to be found. I don't even know who else they have, but – he's pretty much the guy for that offense. I mean, in terms of big plays. And I was surprised again, Frank Gore, he's a good running back. They just seem to disappear at times. I mean, if you look back, they were 1-for-13 on third downs in that game.
Yeah. And that one first down they got was the last play of regulation. So it was essentially a meaningless first down. So essentially the Giants got off the field every single time it mattered on third down in the game,
which is amazing. And I mean, and that's, you keep their offense on the field, you keep their defense on the field. As good as that defense is, I mean, they were on the field for 90 plays, I think.
Yep.
So that's going to wear them down. And then, you see that, with a guy like Eli who can stand in there, take the pressure, creative, making plays outside the pocket. I mean, you know, after you're 75, 85, 90 plays into a game, it becomes much easier for a receiver to slip away, the coverage breakdown. So, I mean, that was hats off to the Giants defense for getting off the field like that and keeping their offense out there. I mean, because they needed all the opportunities they could get to get points on that defense, you know?
Yeah. And I was saying, you know, every time we got the ball at the 20 or inside our own 20 to start a drive, I kept saying, you know what? Obviously, we're not going to go the length of the field on this defense. We need to get two first downs or three first downs, and then we need to punt it because Weatherford was having a great day. And we need to pin them back because they can't move the ball. And I had these two Giants fans in front of us. They were kind of annoying. They were super drunk. We were calling one of the guys Sling Blade. And he kept saying, "No, we need seven. We need seven." And I said, "Yeah, well, we're not going to get. We just can't. I mean, that defense was playing too well. You could tell the further along in the game it got that the Giants, you know, Eli, it was harder. You know, some of those balls were floating up there. The receivers were having a harder time accelerating. But I don't know if it's play calling or if it's just that Alex Smith, you know, the one knock on Alex Smith, and he had a very good season, but the one thing that really makes you wonder if this guy can ever be a starting quarterback long term is all year long the big knock on him was this guy gets field goals. But he's been so traumatized by all the criticism that he doesn't have the confidence to try to squeeze it in a tight window when they really need to come away with a touchdown.
But that's the crazy thing, because that's exactly what he did the week before in New Orleans.
Last
touchdown to Vernon Davis, I mean, that was a ballsy throw, especially where you're thinking, all right, we're in field goal range, you know, don't do anything stupid and we'll tie this game and go to overtime.
Yeah, but that people were so shocked by that. I mean, everyone was saying, I can't believe that he threw that ball. I can't believe that that was the play call, because if that ball gets picked, all you're going to hear about afterwards is, Alex Smith has never made a throw like that. What are they doing? And, you know, because when you think about it, they had two big plays in this game. Okay, one was the Vernon Davis touchdown. Antrell Roll has already said he had bad footwork. He took a terrible angle. He misread the route. He was sitting on that route, and instead Vernon Davis was, you know, running for the end zone. And then when he was chasing him, he thought Vernon Davis had stepped out of bounds, so he slowed down. So basically Antrell Roll made a huge mistake about five different times on that play. And that's how they got their one. So Vernon Davis was fucking wide open on that play. And on the second play, I watched the second play like 25 times now, Kenny Phillips is up on Davis, and he's the trail technique, so he lets Davis get by him, and he's playing the underneath throw. And Corey Webster is supposed to be coming over the top, and Corey Webster just misses assignment. He came too late, and so, I mean, Vernon Davis, again, was wide open. So Alex Smith made those two throws. He also took one shot at Kyle Williams, who was wide open, and overthrew him. Other than that, I mean, this was nothing but checkdowns, screen passes, rolling out and throwing it in the dirt. I mean, this guy was just afraid to take a shot. And, you know, that's not – that can, with that defense and with that special teams, that can take you a long way. And if a few things go different in this game, that could have taken them to the Super Bowl. But certainly, you're not going to win a championship with that. And so I don't know if then – you know, I guess the answer is that Alex Smith has earned the right to be the starter there next year, or at least to start the year. But, I mean, is Kaepernick the answer? Do they need to keep looking? But, you know, certainly, and give, you know, there have really only been two guys who have been consistently healthy and effective on defense for the Giants all year. JPP is obviously one. The other one is Corey Webster, who's gotten no love this year, even though he's just been shutting down receivers every week. He had Crabtree in his back pocket all game. But, you know, that doesn't mean that Crabtree deserves to be targeted three times in that game. I mean, you know, you gotta try to move the ball. You gotta take a shot.
Yeah, they need another wide receiver. I mean, from everything that I've seen of Crabtree, he seems like a decent possession receiver, but I don't think he's the number one that they thought he was going to be. I mean, I watched him in college, and I thought the guy was going to be a legit NFL receiver. Nothing too exciting first couple of years in the league here. I think if I was drafting for them, I definitely would want a more dynamic playmaker for that offense, you know, somebody to go alongside Davis, you know, so they've got another option like that. But I mean, hey, hats off to the Giants defense. I mean, for those two big plays, like you said, in the playoffs, those great players are going to make those plays if you make a mistake. I mean, that's just the nature of the game. It only takes a couple steps in the wrong direction for somebody to get open in that league. And overall, you know, I don't know how much the weather had to do with it, them being a little bit more conservative, maybe with the wind blowing and the rain and the wet ball. And, you know, it's tough for receivers to get downfield, too, in those conditions, just like it is for defensive linemen putting a pass rush on. So that kind of slows everything down a little bit. But
As we're going here, I apologize that I'm sniffling some. I did get sick at that game. Which,
I was noticing. I mean, you caught your cold. You caught a cold out there. Were you wearing a poncho of some kind? Or you just – I imagine that you just, like, you wore, like, a really heavy cotton sweatshirt. And by 5 minutes before kickoff, it was already soaking wet. Like 75 pounds.
You know, I did wear a waterproof coat, but I had it unzipped because I had my Good Luck Giant shirt under it. And I forgot I had unzipped the hood off of that coat a while ago, so I didn't have a hood on. And, you know, and then Christ, you know, it took 3 hours to get, like, to the car and out of the parking lot. And but, you know, so, you know, a couple of things, you know, just for the 49ers to look at here is, so obviously the defense is good. You know, and obviously guys are going to come and go, but they've got a solid foundation there. And the offensive line is very good. I mean, very, very good. So I also feel like I agree with you, Frank Gore. I think he's to the point now where his actual production is not quite up to what the reputation is. However, I think Kendall Hunter is a really dynamic player for them. So I think, you know, and they've got the two tight ends. They've got Vernon Davis. They've got Delanie Walker. So it really is an issue of wide receivers and quarterback. And that's what it is. I think they'll be able to get that solved. But I just want to say, you know, I'm hearing a lot, and part of it is I'm not in San Francisco, but I'm 30 minutes outside San Francisco. So I'm listening to the radio, and I'm hearing a lot of bitterness, and I'm hearing a lot of things that I just don't think are true. I'm hearing that the Giants really lucked out in this game. First of all, I'm not sympathetic to this at all because, as you know, 9 years ago, we played them in Candlestick in a playoff game, and admittedly, we did blow a 24-point lead. But we had a bad hold on a field goal, and an eligible lineman downfield was interfered with when the pass went to him. And the next day,
he was an eligible receiver.
He was an eligible receiver. And that's why when the NFL released a statement on Monday saying this was an eligible receiver, there should have been pass interference. The Giants should have been able to kick from there.
Right.
But they can't go back and redo it.
No.
So I have no sympathy for that anyways, but you know, mistakes happen. And just like, you know, just like, now admittedly, Kyle Williams, that first turnover, that is a huge mistake. But that guy's been taking risks for weeks. You look at him earlier in the game, trying to dive under a punt. You look at him against the Saints, letting a ball bounce 2-3 times on a punt, and then fielding it and trying to take them by surprise. And so, you do that enough, you're going to get burned. But that's really, I mean, you know, Antrell Rowe also totally messed up defending Vernon Davis on that one touchdown play. So I think just like you can argue the Giants had big points off of two big mistakes by the Niners. The Niners also had their only two long pass plays off of huge mistakes in the Giants secondary.
I'm glad you brought up the Williams thing, because I mean, like you were talking about how important field position was in this game and for the ability of the Giants just to possess the ball, move the chains a couple times, keep the Niners down on their own end of the field. I mean, and they did that. The thing that made these turnovers so, you know, devastating for the Niners is that they're deep in their own territory. And they led the points in both instances, I think. But a lot of people are talking about this Kyle Williams thing. It's an interesting symmetry where there's like a special teams guy in both of these games, in the AFC game and the NFC game, who's taking like all the blame for the respective team's losses. And all this stuff that's coming out about the Giants players targeting Williams because he'd had some concussions. What do you make of that? What's your reaction to that?
Look, obviously head injuries are a big issue. We're not learning anything here. What the Giants are saying is this guy has had concussions in the past, right? We're if he tries to return a punt, we're going to be hitting him anyways. That means if we get some really good shots on him, he might start to be more tentative. He might have to come out of the game, and they might have to put someone else in. What were the Niners trying to do when they were crushing Eli Manning right after he released the ball? You know what I mean? I mean, you're... Right.
I guess this is one of those things you're not supposed to say, but everybody knows it's going on.
Yeah, and that's football. And you and I both played. This happens, right? If you know that a quarterback has had back problems, or if you know that a quarterback has had shoulder problems, or if you know that a quarterback has cracked ribs, I mean... Then it goes without saying, of course you're going to try to get hits on him. I think the fact that it's concussions and the fact that it's a head injury is what allows people to think it's newsworthy. But, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, if you can get a hit on a crucial player for the other team, you're going to try to make it as big a hit as you can. I mean, this is the NFL, you know?
Yep.
And a couple other things. I mean, I really think that, and, you know, people are going to get upset because it's Patriots and Giants, and they already think we're all full of themselves, and we already talk about how lucky we are to have great front offices and great coaches. But I do think when you get down to this time of year, there really is something to be said for having not just a better 11-man unit on offense or defense, but having a better 53-man roster. And when you look at the Giants, I mean, this is a team that during the offseason, they weren't making some of the sexier moves that some of their divisional opponents were. They were not making any big splashes, and at the same time, they were letting guys walk who they didn't think were good value to them. Kevin Boss, Steve Smith. People are getting worried. They're cutting offensive linemen. And, you know, Jerry Reese said, listen, I know people are upset or worried, but we have a plan as an organization, and we're sticking to that plan, and we believe in it. And... you know, then right off the bat, I mean, when you look at the injuries with this team, Terrell Thomas goes down, our best cornerback, our leading tackler from last year. Our starting middle linebacker goes down, Jonathan Goff. We have, Marvin Austin, our second-round pick, supposed to be make an impact on the D-line this year. He's out for the year. OCU Mignora, Justin Tuck, both missed significant time this year. And we had receivers, Hakeem Nicks missed about 4 games. Mario Manningham missed games. Jake Ballard missed games. And I think that when you look at it, being able to just stick to your plan, doing a good job drafting, making sure you're not overspending for any one player so that you can have guys who are able to step in. I mean, Christ, when we played New Orleans, at one point on the field, our 3 main linebackers for the game were Mark Herzlich, undrafted, had cancer 8 months ago, Jaquan Williams, a 6th-round pick, and Deion Grant, who's our 3rd safety. And that's just the NFL. And so I think the fact that you did have guys who were able to step in and get them to this position, the fact that, you know, we still don't have Goff, we still don't have Terrell Thomas, and yet Aaron Ross, you know, he messes up a lot. He got called for hands to the face about 3 times in that game. But considering the circumstances, not bad. Chase Blackburn, bringing him back and doing a good job and not panicking. And then when you look
at
it...
That guy claps a lot.
He does clap a lot. He really does.
That's one thing I noticed. I mean, but isn't this like... We're saying this now because we're preparing for the Giants to play the Patriots in the Super Bowl, right? I mean, 4 weeks ago, I mean, if they lose that last game to Dallas, I mean, isn't it a totally different story in New York? Isn't it a lost season, a failed season? Granted, I mean, I think the problems for the Giants were much more injury related than, say, personnel decisions. Like, I agree with you. I think the Giants have got great depth on that roster. And, you know, you talked about the guys who missed a lot of time, the injuries at the beginning of the year. But, I mean, if the Giants lose that game to Dallas and are out of the playoffs, are we talking about, you know, Coughlin being gone? I always wonder that because, you know, Coughlin's a guy who's been, he's been in New York for a long time, right? And even before they won the Super Bowl in 2007, people were really calling for him to be out of there for his job, you know. And I kind of felt like this season was heading in that direction a little bit too. Granted, the injury thing is out of his control.
Right.
But, I mean, you know the way that professional sports works.
Yeah.
And New York's a tough market. I mean, and Coughlin, now he's been in New York, I think, 9 years now, which is an incredible run for a head coach in the NFL. I think he's now matched the same tenure as Parcells, who is probably the guy, the standard to which all New York coaches are judged in that organization. That's part of what makes it such a great story too, though, right. Is because this is a team here who played their way into the playoffs in the last week of the season, went on the road three times, went to Green.
First game was at home.
First game was at home. Okay, so went on the road twice against probably the two top teams in the NFC.
Yep.
And beat them both, and now we're hearing all these things. I mean, this playoff run, I think, has been, I think it's probably assured Coughlin at least another couple years in New York.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. And it's also taken Eli, up a whole nother level,
Yeah.
I mean, and whereas if you just lose that last game, I mean, that's the amazing thing about sports. And that's what I think what makes this Giants team particularly such a great story is because the AFC was weak, and the Patriots, by virtue of getting the number one seed and home field advantage, had a fairly easy road to the playoff, to the Super Bowl comparatively. I mean, Denver right. was not a very good team. Baltimore was a tough team, but still Baltimore is not as good, I don't think, as Green Bay, and certainly not as tough as San Francisco in San Francisco. I feel like this for this Giants team, I mean, this is like really the this is kind of a run for the ages. This is kind of like this is going to be part of the lore of the franchise, this run in particular, because of the kind of season that they had. And that's just what's so, I didn't think is so amazing is that, from one game, for them to get that momentum going towards the playoffs, it's probably totally changed, people's outlooks on the franchise,
yep.
right? And you're like,
yep.
right or wrong. Like, I mean, Coughlin's yep. not coaching the games any differently, than he would have, if you know what I'm saying, basically.
Yeah.
It's like they're doing what they were doing, but, because they got into playoffs and because they're winning these games, everyone's like oh, all right. Now, I mean, people even in New England are saying now, like, oh, well, because the Patriots are back in the Super Bowl, you can get ready for them to, keep trading down all their picks and, cutting people and trying to, and like doing all this stuff that Belichick does that makes people pull their hair out because it's maybe a little bit unorthodox. Maybe it's a little bit arrogant in a way. People get the perception of him like he does what he does, and everybody, like, common logic be damned, he's doing it his way. And then, if you go to the Super Bowl, you got the right to do that. You can say it. And frankly, I guess you probably should get that leeway because that's the whole point of playing
right.
the games, right?
But you're right. It's easier to say that once you already have that outcome. But I would just say, Tom Coughlin was not going to be fired, just like Eli Manning, before Super Bowl 42 was not going to lose his job. But you are right. The way that the media sees it, because especially the New York media, they don't want to hear injuries. They don't want to hear, oh, shit, we had to start Deion Grant at linebacker in New Orleans along with two rookies against the Saints offense. And so, of course, they don't want to hear that. You're right. But I guess my point is, even though they had those injuries, even though things were not going well, they still stick to the plan. It would have been, well, we weren't healthy enough to do it, but next year those guys would have been back, and we still, we would not have been in cap trouble. We wouldn't have – look at what Philly did with Asamoah. I got news for you. Asante Samuel was the best cornerback on that team this year, without question.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
– but I guess the last thing I'll say before we kick over to the AFC game is I just want to give a little bit of credit because, everyone's talking about Kyle Williams with that fumble in overtime. And certainly, he probably should have done a better job securing the ball. But Jaquan Williams, who's been outstanding as a rookie this year, great in coverage, has made that play on special teams. I mean, that was a nice play to knock that ball out. He was not near him. He was not right in front of him. He had to reach out to do it. And it's just a heads-up play. And even more so, I think, Devin Thomas –
recovered both of the fumbles.
Yeah, he recovered both of them, exactly. And just the fact that he kept hustling his ass downfield, because on that first one where it hit Williams' knee, he's the one who saw that it hit the knee. He's the one that picked it up. He had been pushed out of bounds on that play. And so it would have been easy for him to just slow up because he could not be the first person to down it. He kept hustling down there. He saw it. He made the play. And the same thing. Jaquan Williams knocked it out, and Thomas was in a position to make that play. And then, you know, of course, to the offense, as you said, because they were able to get the field position, that then it made an easy score. But, those are guys. Devin Thomas was in the mix at receiver. You know, early in the year when you and I were saying, well, there's Hakeem Nicks and Mario Manningham, and those guys are pretty good. And then there's Hickson, another guy who went down this year. And then we're reading off the names, and we're saying Devin Thomas, Victor Cruz, we don't know who these guys are. And, you know, then Devin Thomas hasn't seen a lot of time at receiver. But, you know, again, he runs hard. And, you know, he knows that his role is important. And those are two big plays. So
those are huge plays. I mean, the beauty of the playoffs, and especially games like these two championship games were, where it was really back and forth. I don't think anybody in either game had a lead of more than 7 points. At any time. I'm not 100% sure about the Giants-Niners game, but it feels like these games were within 10 points at the most the entire four quarters, exchanging field goals, like you said, a lot of field position. And in games like this, you really see how personal efforts on individual plays, like a guy hustling down to cover a kick, being in the right place to pick up a fumble, the one-on-one matchups that happen and the way that the momentum can shift from play to play. I mean, that's what makes the NFL, I think, such amazing entertainment, such a fascinating game. The personal battles one-on-one. You can have a guy who gets knocked on his ass one play, come back up the next play, and make a huge interception.
Brandon Spikes.
That's exactly what I'm thinking about, man. Because and that was, I mean, if you liked hard-nosed football, you got to see a lot of it this weekend, because the Brandon Spikes and Vontae Leach were hitting each other every single play, just about. I mean, like, and those are two just like straight up men.
Yeah, just absolutely
fucking crushing each other every single play, play in and play out. And the play before that, Spikes interception, Vontae Leach knocked Spikes right on his ass.
Yep.
Right. And then he gets up the next play and makes an amazing pick in coverage like that. I don't think anybody expected him to make. And that was a huge, huge swing at that point. You know, the Patriots are up three and they get good field position. Of course, Brady comes out and throws an interception the next play. But I mean, it's like that's the kind of crazy shit that's happening. Like one play to the next. And you look at the players that are making these plays and the way that they react to adversity and, you know, the highs and the lows. And it just seems like games like this, all those things are magnified. Each drive it seems like an eternity of time, like an individual battle back and forth. And I thought this was some of the most exciting playoff football that we've ever seen. I mean, and if you even go back the week before, I mean, you got to put that that Niners New Orleans games. That's one of the greatest finishes to a playoff game that I've ever seen. Trading punches down the end. And you've seen some great personal performances. I mean, before we jump to AFC, I do just want to talk about Eli a little bit and the way that he's played this year and the way that he's played in these playoffs. And we talked a lot about his toughness and his ability to take hits and make plays. But this was really an incredible year for him. And kind of establishing himself. I mean, at the beginning of the season, we had that whole conversation where he got so much shit for saying that he considered himself to be in the same class as Tom Brady and the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. And even I admittedly kind of brushed it off and said, well, I don't know if you can really put him in that class yet. And frankly, I think you have to now. And if you look what he's done in the postseason, he's 6-1 on the road in the playoffs, which is unbelievable against some amazing teams. And, you know, while statistically his numbers may not be as exciting as Breeze and Rodgers and Brady or Peyton, but I mean, what do those numbers really mean right now anyway? Because Breeze and Rodgers weren't playing in the championship game. They're not playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and those numbers can be so misleading. I mean, first of all, I mean, when you think about the opponent he was playing against last week and how that skews it, I mean, Alex Smith had a higher QB rating than Eli did in that game. And, you know, I think that tells you everything you need to know right there.
Right. But, I mean, I think that you do have to include Eli in the discussion of elite quarterbacks in this league now. You know, he kind of reminds me a lot of a guy like, you know, like a Curt Schilling in a way. Like, maybe he doesn't put up the flashiest numbers during the regular season, but the guy is just a workhorse, and he wins games in the playoffs when it counts. He doesn't seem to flinch at all when the game's on the line. It's been kind of fun to watch him. I mean, I'm worried about playing him in a week, but it's been fun to watch him because, like, you almost can't help find yourself rooting for the guy because, like you said, I mean, you know, you see like a Drew Brees, like the vintage Drew Brees plays, like him dropping back and throwing like a 50-yard pass down the sideline. I mean, that's all well and good, but you know, the way that the games are called now, and I mean, if you look at the league as a whole and you see that like 12 guys threw for 4,500 yards or something this year, I mean, that it's almost lost. That's not as amazing as it might seem. You know, because so many guys are doing it now. But when you got a guy who can go on the road and win in the playoffs like that, and who's getting the chance to play in the last game of the year because of that, I think that should count for something, you know. And I wonder, you know, like how much of a difference, like how great must this be for him? I mean, in a way, because like for this whole year, like he was completely out of the shadow of Peyton, you know, who wasn't playing the entire season. So that's for the first time he's really kind of out there as the only Manning. You know, it's been exciting to watch. I mean, he worries me in a way a lot more than some of those other quarterbacks do because I know that if you get to him and you hit him, it's not going to faze him. You know, like, and he just makes those plays that where the things break down and – you know, he's scrambling, guys get open. It's been a pretty amazing run for him through this playoffs. I mean, beating some great quarterbacks in his own right, you know.
Yeah, it's been great. And he is, you know, I think exactly sort of like you just said, Chris Collinsworth said it well. I heard him say, he said, Eli, he just doesn't have a pulse out there. And that's sort of what you need. I mean, you know, and to me, he's the perfect guy for this team. He's the perfect guy to be playing that game last week because he can get hit, you know, or he can make a big play or he can make a mistake, and he's going to approach the next drive the same way. So when he gets up big, you know that, you know, he's not going to start being careless with the ball and maybe give the lead up. If things are going badly, you know that, you know, when the next drive starts, you know, we've got just as good a chance as we did when the game began. And he's just really cool under pressure. And I got to say, it's been really great. And the interesting thing has been, you know, he's not one of these guys, you know, I guess like a Brady or a Rodgers who, you know, just burst on the scene and were lighting people up. I mean, it has been, you know, they said from day one when he got to the Giants training facility, he was the hardest worker there. He was staying later than everyone. He was getting in earlier than everyone. He was putting in more time than everyone. And you've just seen it from the time he began to now. He's just been steadily getting better, steadily improving. You know, and he took his lumps along the way. But I got to tell you what, they win this game next Sunday. He is a lock for Canton if they win that game next Sunday. Absolutely.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, I was looking.
And how about Coughlin, too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think he has to be. And so you know.
Yep. I mean, there's a. Yeah, it is. It's a big game. It's a big game for a lot of these guys. I mean, I think in a way it's also in the same sense, you know, it's a big game for Brady and Belichick too. I mean, granted, I don't think anybody can argue with what they've already accomplished, but they carrying a little bit of a stigma around with them. They hadn't won a playoff game since 2007 before beating the Broncos 2 weeks ago. And for them, this is kind of a, you know, a return to glory, a way to prove to the world that they haven't, you know, that they haven't fallen off completely. You know, obviously, I mean, I think that's an interesting argument to be made for Eli. I mean, I don't think I certainly think he's got several more years of good play, and that the Giants team is going to be a good team going forward. Cause like you said, I mean, the way that they run the organization, they're going to have a chance. They've got the toughest division in the league. But they're going to be in it going forward. And, you know, I think it's a great matchup here in the Super Bowl for the NFL, because you've got New York and Boston, which huge fan bases in their own right. You'll get a lot of people interested in because of the because they're both cities that people love to hate too. So you get people watching, rooting against the different teams, and you know it's got the whole rematch factor and the fact that these guys have played every year since that Super Bowl, and this will be the third time that they've played this year if you include the preseason. And the game in November, I think it was, which was the last time that the Patriots lost. And that game's actually on NFL Network right now, as we speak. I was watching before we got on here. That game, and if you take that game as an indication of what might be to come on Sunday, first 10 possessions, nobody scored. It was punt, punt, interception, yeah, punt,
nothing,
punt, punt.
And nothing,
it was
just at halftime.
No, it was a total chess match. You know, give and take the whole game. I mean, and the way that game ended, you know, it was, you know, who had the ball last, and Eli, you know, like we're saying, he doesn't blink in those situations.
Yep. Yep.
Drove him right down and scored the go-ahead touchdown. So,
and we'll get into the matchups next week, but totally different game too. I mean, we were missing. Well, never mind. Let's save that. I mean, you guys aren't even running the same defense now.
No.
But so let's talk AFC. I mean, this was your birthday, so this was a nice gift.
It was my birthday. It turns out it's also Ray Rice's birthday. We share a birthday.
Uh-huh. Also my sister's birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, this is what a crazy world. Your sister and I won, though. Actually, I don't know if she's a Giants fan or not. She's a Patriots fan.
She's engaged to a Bears fan, but we'll let that slide, you know?
Well, you can't win them all, man. But I just lost my train. Yeah, my birthday. So this was a great game. And the reason I like this game so much, obviously Brady struggled, threw two interceptions, only threw for like 230 yards, which you kind of expect. Baltimore's got his number a little bit. But the thing that's been most exciting to me, most, you know, that I find most promising going into the Super Bowl has been the way that the defense has played in the two playoff games. And granted, Denver is not particularly the world's most dynamic of offenses, particularly if you get a lead on them, and Brady and the offense played out of their mind that game. So it was kind of best case scenario where Denver was playing from behind the whole time, really can't do what they want to do. But the defense played great in the first round, or whatever, the divisional round. And they played great for about 90% of this game against Baltimore. And it was really the fact that the offense had the turnovers that kept it as close as it did, because down the stretch, really, the Patriots had the chance to really put themselves in the driver's seat when Spikes intercepted that ball. Brady came out on the next play, threw down the middle into triple covered Matthew Slater, who's like a special teams guy. That didn't make sense to me at all. But had they even got a field goal there and taken time off the clock, they would have been up six with like, you know, maybe 2 minutes to go, and really, you know, put the pressure on Baltimore. But the defense came out and set the tone. From the beginning, Vince Wilfork played one of the best games of his career as a Patriot. He had six tackles, totally dominant in this game.
Best player in that game by far.
Oh, and it was great, because I'm a huge Vince Wilfork fan. I love the fact that it's just great to watch a dominant interior defensive lineman, particularly in like a 3-4. If you like things about the game that aren't just touchdowns and things like that, it's just kind of the personal matchups, the intricacies of that position, and its importance. Because frankly, when we played Baltimore in 2008, or 2009. I think it was 2009. Ray Rice takes the opening handoff, 87 yards, and the game was over after that.
Right.
That was it. I mean, that they were able to fight back, but after that had happened, that was it. And this defense, I think, you know, remembering how quickly, you know, Baltimore took control of that game, came out, set the tone from the beginning that said, you're not going to run on us. Ray Rice really didn't do much of anything during that game. They shut him down completely. And they basically said, all right, Flacco, you're going to have to – we're going to make you beat us. And they played a great game. I don't know. There were some tough matchup issues for them. You know, the tight ends for Baltimore were very good. But they did a nice job, and you know they were able to keep a lot of guys in the box because of Baltimore's offense, and you know, even the touchdown to Torrey Smith, which was on a 3rd and 5 or 3rd and 6, they had the perfect play call. They got a blitz, they got pressure on Flacco, he threw it in the flat. Sterling Moore makes the tackle where Torrey Smith catches that ball. It's 4th down, and the Ravens are punting. You know, so. Yeah. You know, it would, and that was just, I mean, and there's, you know, there's a good example of what we were talking about earlier. I mean, the ups and downs. Sterling Moore misses that tackle right there in the open field. Torrey Smith scores a touchdown, put the Ravens go ahead. And then on the last drive of the game, Sterling Moore comes out, makes 2 great defensive plays to save the game and force the Ravens to attempt a field goal. You know, we talked about spikes. We talked about that matchup. It was just a very, very good defensive game for the New England Patriots. They still have problems in the secondary. Going forward with the Giants wide receivers, I think they're much better than what Baltimore has. And you know, we got some matchups. I mean, down towards the end of the game, we have Julian Edelman covering Anquan Boldin, and they go to Boldin 5 times in the last drive. You know, and move the ball all the way down the field. I mean, you talk about having a safety move to linebacker. I mean, try having a small slot receiver playing, you know, defensive back against a very good NFL wideout. That's a tough matchup. We're thin in the secondary, man. We are very thin back there. But
this is not trash talk, and we're going to get into the matchups next week, and I know that I cannot underestimate Bill Belichick with 2 weeks to prepare. But I got to tell you, when I saw that, I was licking my chops thinking about Hakeem Nicks matched up by Julian Edelman. I couldn't help it.
I mean, if they're going to match up Edelman on Nicks, they might as well just lie down on their backs and make snow angels. That's just not going to happen. I mean, and Edelman, I mean, he's one of those – I mean, and the Edelman thing, you know, is one of those things where, like, because the Patriots win – people like let Belichick off the hook for this, but it's a little bit ridiculous. I mean, like, they did it with Troy Brown, guys moving over from receiver to play defense. I mean, I don't know if it could be much worse with an actual defensive player, but for better or for worse, you know, Belichick, this is something that he seems to like to do.
Does this shit really work? Like, other teams do this too, and you know, like the fucking Packers put Raji at fullback, and the Niners do this. The Niners had Sopuaga and Justin Smith blocking in this game the one time they came out in a big formation. I watched the game. Matthias Kiwanuka ran up. He took on Justin Smith and threw him aside like a fucking ragdoll.
Yeah,
and then
I watched.
I mean, yeah, and I watched Anquan Boldin torch Julian Edelman. I've never seen Raji do anything of note. I mean, why do they do this shit, man?
I think it's because of William the Fridge Perry.
Yeah.
I mean, like people are still, like, drinking the Kool-Aid on that move. Like, that was great when there was, like, when your average defensive lineman was, like, 250 pounds, you know.
Right.
But it rarely does work. I mean, you just see, like, this, like, Justin Smith, he's not an offensive lineman. He's not a fullback. He's not used to blocking an NFL defensive end. He's used to trying to beat blocks. It's a totally different activity. You can say, yeah, he's just a big physical guy. Let him run in there. But, I mean, it's just not the same. I mean, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis played fullback for an entire year for the Patriots.
But that's a little more similar.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying is, like, you know, you have a running back who's used to blocking, used to reading defenses the way that they approach you when you're on offense. The kind of reading they're doing on the other side of the ball is completely different from your reaction, your natural reactions as a defensive player. So, I mean, I don't know. Would I like to have a slot cornerback? You bet your ass. I mean, maybe Julian Edelman is the best option for this team, personnel-wise. I mean, the secondary has been a problem for the Patriots all year. I mean, it's well documented. They finally got, you know, some consistency in the safety position, but I still don't think Chung and Hedebo are very good coverage guys.
Hedebo?
Hedebo?
I never
UMass
heard of that
guy. Yeah, he was on the Jets last year.
Okay.
He's like a strong safety, but he's playing free safety for the Patriots. And, I mean, anything's better than Sergio Brown. But, I mean, they're just real thin in the secondary. And so they, you know, they get in positions where one of their guys is going to be one-on-one. And, you know, they've lost a lot of those matchups. You know, the Torrey Smith touchdown is a perfect example. The Bolden catches on that last drive is another example where just physically, athletically, don't necessarily have the horses to match up with some of those guys. So, I mean, they found ways to force Flacco into bad throws. They got good pressure on him. So there's ways to kind of cover up those weaknesses. And they were able to do that in this game. I mean, and they kept it close. And it was really up and down. I mean, the last drive in the fourth quarter, too, I mean, the defense really started to lag. And they gave up 7 or 8 third down conversions in the last quarter. They looked tired. That last drive, they really were you know, a fraction of a second away from losing that game with Lee Evans not able to hold on to that ball in the corner of the end zone, which, I mean, watching it on TV, I mean, it looks, it's insane how close that looks to have been a catch, yep. You know? That's the line, right? I mean, I talked to some people who were at the game, and I guess at the game, because of where it was down in the quarter, I mean, in the corner of the end zone, I guess this guy I was talking to was saying that the people in the stadium really had no idea how close that play was to being a touchdown and to effectively ending the game with like 20 seconds left or something like that.
Yeah, it was very close, but he did not have possession of the ball with both feet down. And, you know, that's the letter of the law. And I, you know, two things I'm hearing about from people, you know, I probably spend too much time trolling the blogosphere and reading the comments of all these fans from the different teams. I want to settle two things very quickly. One that happened in each game about the officiating. A, that was not a catch, and they did review it, okay? I mean, they review everything in the last 2 minutes. They looked at the screen. They said, yeah, that's not a catch. Keep playing. And even if they had stopped the game to review it, it would have been the same ruling. So people who are mad that the game wasn't stopped to review it are idiots. And secondly, I've been hearing all these San Francisco fans talking about Ahmad Bradshaw. On the radio, they're saying he was running forward. He was still fighting for yards. He still had his legs going. I have watched that fucking play at least 50 times on television now.
Yep.
He was falling backwards when that ball was coming out. He had guys pushing him from the front, and he had guys behind him on the ground. That is when that's when there's an injury risk. That's when officials are supposed to blow the forward progress whistle because you don't want guys getting hurt. You don't want guys getting piled on like that. That was called exactly right. And
I
if there's any conspiracy theories, Hockley's crew – always been one of the quickest whistles in the NFL. So it's not like this was an aberration. They are quick to blow the whistle in those situations all the time. So I think if you're a Baltimore fan and you're really zoning in on the fact that that game was not stopped, or if you're a Niners fan and you're willing to just hear this revisionist history on the radio that Ahmad Bradshaw was like about to, you know, run for a touchdown when that whistle was blown, both of you are wrong, and those plays were called correctly. And, you know, you should not feel wrong because of that.
No, I agreed with both those calls. It's just the thing about Hockley. how awesome is it to listen to his explanations of the plays and the rules for overtime? They were playing that on the radio out here, and they had another official mic'd up from one of the other overtime games, who explained the rules of overtime very, very succinctly in about 20 seconds. And then they played Hockey Lee's explanation, which went on for about a minute and a half. It left out key points of the rules. That guy loves to hear himself talk. I mean, but yeah. You know, but I digress. I was glad that the Patriots didn't draw him. Actually,
he is an attorney. So there you go.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So
I was gonna say, well, before you keep going, the Patriots. I was gonna tell you, I read this funny quote about Vince Wilfork on the Shutdown Corner blog. They were listing the five most valuable players from Sunday, and he was one of the top ones. And next to his name, it said. You know, there are lots of guys in the NFL who get paid to because they are strong and because they are big, and they are paid to be on the field and be large, strong, and movable objects. Vince Wilfork throws those men around like pillow dolls.
Which awesome. Is true. And, you know, he plays for a guy his size at that position. He plays about 80% of the snaps for the Patriots. He's on the field the whole time. I mean,
he is fast too, man.
He's so quick, man. You can't even, like, it's hard to imagine that when you go to a Celtics game and you're sitting up in the 300 section and you look down and it looks like somebody's got, you know, a Volkswagen Bug parked courtside with like a pink Volkswagen Bug. And you're like, oh no, it's not an automobile. That's just happens to be Vince Wilfork's back from a quarter of a mile away. You know, he's a freak, man. He's a great athlete. He's a great player. I just want to talk about, you know, just to kind of sum up the game. You know, that last drive, like I said, Baltimore had some rhythm. They were moving the ball easily. And then down at the end of the game, I mean, this is where I felt like things got away from the Ravens coaching staff. In terms of, you know, their clock management, their use of timeouts, because the play before Lee Evans has the ball in his hands and gets it knocked out by Sterling Moore, Anquan Boldin catches a pass, is going out of bounds, fumbles the ball. The ball goes forward past the first down marker and out of bounds. Now, the ruling states that in the fourth quarter, a fumble cannot be when you fumble the ball,
you can't advance.
You don't get any forward progress. It's from the point where you fumbled it,
right?
Which has to do with some game. I think the Raiders were in back in the 70s, where a guy fumbled it into the end zone, and somebody else recovered it. So a lot of people were some people have said that or tried to instigate that the scoreboard at the stadium was incorrectly showing a first down on that play when it was not a first down, because the ball gun was marked where he fumbled it, not where it rolled out of bounds past the yard marker. So a lot of people were saying that there was some confusion there. Harbaugh has come out and denied that. They say that they knew what the down and distance was. But the thing that, you know, strikes me the most after watching the replay of this thing is that it doesn't appear that Cundiff knew what the down was and what the time situation was, because if you watch the kick, they're running their field goal unit on after a stoppage of play. So they've got the full 24-second play clock. And he runs onto the field with about 14 seconds left on the play clock to attempt the kick. They snap the ball with 1 second on the play clock, and he misses the kick. And you know, people have come out and said that, you know, it's the discretion of the kicker whether or not he wants to use a timeout in that situation, because the head coach isn't necessarily going to call a timeout, ice his own kicker. But in that situation,
you got to,
right? I mean, you don't want to, it's not a kick you want to rush, right?
No.
I mean, you're on the road, but it's only a 32-yarder. It's not like the guy had to line up from 48, 52, something where he's really going to be thinking about, you know, I've got to get power on the kick or something like that. Regardless, I mean, it's a kick that the guy will make 99% of the time, probably.
Yeah,
but
and this is,
it just seems like it was a little – it just seems like confusion, you know, like, and I'd like to think, you know, that the Patriots are a little bit better coached than that, or like the Giants are a little bit better coached than that. I mean,
yeah, that, although, to be fair,
have a delay of game on their field goal attempt. So, but it wasn't in the last seconds of the game, right?
No, they had delay of game on the winning kick. But anyway, no, but you're right. You're right. And my thing is, you see, Cundiff is wearing sweatpants, and he's right. got to take rip them off right before he runs on the field because he thought he didn't know the down. And that, I mean, that right there says to me, okay, we need to use a timeout. And I understand he missed the kick, so it's easy for us to say this. But look, I mean, look at what happens. If you just think of this as a play, as any play, okay?
Yep.
What happens when quarterback gets out there and there's confusion? There's confusion about the defense. There's confusion about the formation. There's confusion about anything. Or the play clock's running down too quickly, you take a timeout.
Yep.
And in this case, this was the last play of regulation.
And they had a timeout, you know.
And they had a timeout. And this is, you're either still playing or your season's over. To me, you have to take the timeout in that situation. And anybody who's claiming this, you know, the down and distance or anything, and anything that was unfair, that's bullshit, because it doesn't matter. I don't even know if the scoreboard was wrong or not. Even if it was wrong for a second, it doesn't matter. Okay, this
right.
is the AFC Championship game. You got to know what the fuck is going on.
Right. How many right? coaches does an NFL franchise have that are charting the game and are on headsets communicating to one another? And you know, Harbaugh came out and said that had no effect on what they did. That, you know. And basically what it says is that he left it to the discretion of Cundiff. But if you're the head coach and you see guys running on with 14 seconds, you know, lining up quickly, you know, the play clock winding down while he's still getting ready, getting his feet set, I think you just have to call the timeout. Like, I think it's too big of a play to rush, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I think you got to give your team the best possible situation. And I don't think that Cundiff was the guy who made the Pro Bowl last year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the guy. And granted, I mean, he came out after the game and took full responsibility, you know, was very open and forthcoming about it. You know, you feel terrible for – I always feel terrible for these guys. Like, I love the fact that he missed the kick because the Patriots win, but it's like, you know, these kickers, I mean, it's so tough. I mean, you can't imagine putting yourself in his shoes where, you know, people are blaming him for the loss when, you know, he's on the field for like 8 plays out of 100
yeah.
and something, you know,
and
that's just the nature
go.
Of the beast. There's no way around that. Right. I mean,
yeah.
it's just the way that job is.
And, then you got to go look guys in the eyes, your Ed Reeds, your Ray Lewis's, your Haloti Ngata's yeah. who played 50, 60 plays and are exhausted. And you got to say, you know, shit, I'm sorry. You know,
yep.
I just caught you that game. But I agree with you, the timeout needed to be called. And, you know, to be fair, like you said, the Ravens, nobody on the Ravens has made any insinuations that, you know, the Patriots had done anything wrong. They have not made excuses. In fact, like you said, Cundiff went out of his way to take responsibility. Harbaugh went out of his way to say there was nothing. Even, yeah, great video if you guys haven't seen it, Terrell Suggs being interviewed by Skip Bayless, and they have a little feud going on, and Bayless asking him about the game, and Suggs mentioned something about how there was some confusion, and immediately Skip Bayless says, oh, so are you saying that the Patriots got a little home cooking with the scoreboard? And Terrell Suggs says, no, Skip, I know what you're doing. Stop it. Be an analyst. Don't be a douchebag. And it was awesome.
That really made my day when you sent me over that.
Yeah.
It was a great game, a great finish. The Patriots should have been able to put the game a little bit further out of reach in the closing stretch. I would have liked to have seen them. They had the ball with like 2 minutes and 53 seconds left. And they couldn't get a first down. So Baltimore was able to have time on the clock to get that final drive. I would have loved to have seen them be able to go out and convert at least one first down on that final drive that the Patriots had, which would have put them inside the 2 minute warning. It would have forced the Ravens to use all their timeouts. And it would have just made that final drive for the Ravens that much more difficult, you know, but they didn't do it. and Cundiff missed the kick. I mean, worst case scenario, they would have gone to overtime, which would, you know, was essentially the way it would have been a toss up, given the way that the defense played down the stretch and the way that Brady had been shaky. I mean, Brady was shaky in that game. The positive thing is that he doesn't usually have two games like that in a row. Baltimore, I think, has historically been very tough against Brady. Brady's had some of his worst games against them. They pose a lot of problems with the with their secondary. I think Baltimore has one of the better secondaries in the league. Obviously, Ed Reed is a great player. Ladarius Webb, who was matched up on Welker and basically shut him down, had a pick, played great that entire game because Welker was really a non-factor. Jimmy Smith, their rookie cornerback. I mean, that's as tough a secondary as you're going to see in the NFL. And I thought that, at least for the passing game, I thought that they pose a particular amount of problems for Brady. And then he didn't play a great game. He made a terrible decision on the throw to Slater that was intercepted after the Spikes interception. At a really bad time. I mean, everybody knows that you get a turnover like that, the team is going to run a play action pass and take a shot.
Right.
Like it's just one. It's just an unwritten rule of the NFL. Like, you know you're going to do it. You just expect that if Brady sees that Matthew Slater, who's like the sixth wide receiver, is double covered down the middle of the field, that you're not going to take a shot down there. I just thought that he was a little bit off that game, and he was trying to do too much. He was pressing a little bit. And he missed some easy throws, too. He missed a throw to Gronkowski in the first half that where he was wide open going down the seam, was an absolute touchdown. Easiest throw maybe he would have had all year, and just missed the throw. So he was off that game. But
that should almost –
things that he had to do.
Honestly, the way he's been – again, I don't want you to misconstrue anything I say as disparaging or trash talk, but the way he's been carrying you guys – in a lot of these games, you at least have to feel pretty good that, you know what, this guy, I mean, he even said he sucked. He sucked in this game. And, you know, and this was a very good team you were playing, and you know, you still managed to pull it out. And you know, and now you're going to the Super Bowl, and like you said, be super surprised. I mean, I'd be surprised if he didn't play a great game in the Super Bowl, never mind playing this bad again.
Right. I mean, he just has – there's a good history of him coming back from these off weeks. And, I mean, if you look at the way he played against Denver, granted, I don't think Denver's defense is as good as New York's is, or certainly not as good as Baltimore's was. But he was out of his mind that game. And if he gets into a rhythm like that in the Super Bowl – It's gonna be a long day for those Giants defenders. But I mean,
sure,
we'll get into all that stuff next week. I mean, I think I've touched on.
I think you've hit all
most
the main
of things.
Points.
What I wanted to talk about in that Patriots game. Again, I mean, just like as a fan of football, this was an amazing weekend. I mean, and you think of how far we've come in 9 months. Since, you know, the end of the lockout to now, you know, the NFL has come through just shining. You know, it is the greatest sport in America. It's the most exciting, entertaining sport in America. You know, there's no disputing that as far as I'm concerned. The playoffs were amazing. Leading up to the Super Bowl, I have no doubt in my mind that the Super Bowl is going to be a good game. I think it's going to be close no matter what it is. I just love the NFL, right? Because everything about this year, like the way that the lockout was handled, like you look at what happened with the NBA and the way that, you know, the league just totally, and the players' association, like, totally fucked that up. And you look at the quality of the play in the NBA right now. The NFL went through the lockout, handled it with class and mutual respect, I thought, which we usually don't see in these type of labor negotiations, where you see the players and the coaches at a press conference hugging one another, just being excited about the season. Then you have the season that we just had where you had all these records broken. You had some great young teams emerge. You know, you had, I mean, the San Francisco team, the Detroit team, those are great stories in the NFC. You know, the Giants run, you know,
Tebow.
I mean, just some amazing, like, just great stories, great theater, great drama, great games, great performances. And the playoffs have just been the icing on the cake. I mean, yeah. It's a home run, man, but for the whole league, for fans. You know, I know people are going to be like, well, of course you're saying that because your team's playing in the Super Bowl. But I just think if you look at it objectively, it's not perfect. You know, there's some things about the way that the game is played now, particularly like the passing and stuff like that, that I don't love. But it's as exciting as it's ever been. There's as many good teams and great players in the league right now as there has ever been.
And did you know that the two championship games on Sunday, you combine the margin of victory in both games, 3 points in each game is 6, by far the lowest ever. First time it's ever been single digits.
Really?
Yeah, so these were the two closest championship games we've ever had. And I would just say, you know, a lot of people knock the league for, you know, favoring the offense so much, and people say defense doesn't matter anymore. But you know what? And certainly the Patriots had, you know, they are going to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. So that was one of the historically great offenses. But you look at the other two, and Green Bay and San Francisco are gone. And when you look at the other three teams that were playing Sunday, and you look at what got them there, and you take a look at then actually what won the Patriots that game, you know, it goes to show that, you know, actually defense does still matter. And so that one criticism doesn't even really hold a whole lot of water.
It doesn't. No.
And the last thing I'll say is if you go to NFL.com, I'm pretty sure it's still up. It's from Monday. I can try to post it up when I post this podcast. There's a really good article that focuses on John Mara, the Giants owner, just talks about, basically, they talk about how someone asked if Jeff Fisher would be interested in the Giants job, and the response was, well, everybody wants the Giants job. And they talked about the Maras and how great they are to work for and how steady they are. And they talked about what a huge role they played in the lockout. And the only other owner that was mentioned in there was Robert Kraft. And Mara said it in it. He said, you know, I have a ton of respect for Kraft. He and I spent so many days together this summer working through the lockout, and we have a great respect. And, you know, it just made me feel good to read that and know that these are the two guys whose franchise has made it to the Super Bowl this year. And, you know, just a reminder that, you know, and look, there are good NBA owners too, but I told you how I felt about the way the owners in the NBA handled this. And just to know that, you know, you've got good guys like that who have been around for a long time. Just, you know, you have to feel good about the league. So this
Absolutely.
Has been great. And next week, we're actually going to get into the game. Break down the matchups, talk about the line, talk about the prop bets, and make our final predictions.
And I'm looking forward to it, man, because for all of the fans of the Chad New England podcast out there, you know, I hope that you enjoy this show. I think next week's going to be great, too. This is kind of a tough time as a football fan because you can really get burnt out on all the coverage that's going on. Like, I'm already starting to taper down my sports radio intake throughout the week. You know, Monday, Tuesday, it's exciting. It's great. It's talking about the championship game. But now we're kind of getting into the wheelhouse of just, you know, bland reporting questions, bland answers. Everybody's being political about this and that. You know, we're going to be talking about the same thing 150 fucking times. But I think what you're going to get here with the Chad New England podcast is just straight up legit sports take. You know, it's going to be unlike anything you've ever experienced.
We're going to score 17 points? Okay. Fucking Tom Brady. Anyway, sorry. I agree. Yeah, so if you're on a media blackout and you listen to this show, please keep us tuned because we promise
this
you
is
we're
all
going
you
to be
need,
talking about this stuff.
This is all you need.
Exactly. And this has been long enough to last you for the next 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, this will get you through 3 cardio workouts. You know, right now you should just be like, you should be up in your peak heart rate. You know, but it's good for you. It's healthy.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
Well, listen, man, I would love to talk about this shit for hours, but, you know, it's 10:30 where you are, and I've got some things I got to do, and I'll look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, man. It's been fun.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you.
Later.
My fucking concert line around the corner. Talking cars, niggas get it, bitch, nothing on it. You looking good, mama, wipes, what's up, homie? Sirene, limousine, in the club on it. Yeah, bitch, you look late, ain't no